Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about getting rid of stuff. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. As you might have heard, David Letterman is ending his show on CBS soon, and he's been talking about the process of moving out. His solution? A big dumpster. Who can't identify with having to or wanting to get rid of stuff? I, for example, am moving right now to three different new locations in Connecticut, New York City, and the North Fork on the East End of Long Island. That process caused us to line up some experts on transitions and getting rid of stuff, whether you feel like decluttering, inherited a home from a relative, you're moving to another area, you want to move out of your 800,000 square foot home into a dune shack. We're going to look at choices for getting rid of stuff. There are choices like estate sales and tag sales and antique dealers and donations and consignment, decluttering first and more. How do you price things? What about online selling? We want to make it easier for you by looking at this from a variety of angles. So we've got a couple of experts coming up. You're going to hear Patty Todd from Consign and Design. Every one of us moves for one reason or another, or we want to get organized. So we're going to go first to Andrew Mellon of Real Simple Magazine, where he writes the column Ask the Organizer. He's been referred to as the most organized man in America. He is author of the book Unstuff Your Life. You might have seen him on Oprah. Thanks, Andrew.
You're welcome, Faith. It's great to be here with you.
So I'm thinking that before we get to Patty and some details of the move, that one of the first things you have to do, in fact, Patty and I were just talking about this, is declutter first. Do you think that's right, Andrew?
Oh, yes. I think you need to know what it is exactly that you're going to keep and what you're going to let go of and how you're going to let go of it before you would bring in another expert who's got a specific focus like resale or consignment, things like that.
Okay. And so do you advise us walking through rooms and putting stickers on things? These are going to be donated. These are going to go to family members. These are, you know, how do you begin?
Well, I think you begin at the place that makes you the most uncomfortable. The place that is the most intense for you is always, I recommend, the place to begin, because you're going to get the greatest result as soon as you make some forward movement there. And you can certainly bring a variety of bins or laundry baskets or boxes into each room, and you can label them to keep, to give away, to sell, to discard, and start to put things in them. You can also take a first pass through everything and remove what I call the low-hanging fruit, the things that you're certain you don't want, that there's no question about them, and nobody else in the family or nobody else that you're related to would be interested in them. And those things can easily get slid right off the top, so that it creates some forward movement for you, and it also opens up the space so you don't feel quite so overwhelmed by the volume of what you're taking on.
Andrew, I love you. How do you? I did the sticker routine without even knowing what I was doing. How do you get rid of things? This is a big question for me. How do you get rid of things that have symbolic importance, meaning something personal that someone important to you gave to you, the thing that represents a piece of your history, a chapter in your life that has meaning, and yet you're not convinced it needs to stay in your life, but it's on the border.
Sure. So it's a great question, and it is always the stuff behind the stuff and never the stuff itself that keeps people stuck. The object itself doesn't have a story. You have the story. And recognizing where you and the story end and the object begins is essential to that process of being able to let go. So you can certainly take a photo of it. You can memorialize it in other ways, but you want to be very mindful of making objects responsible for keeping memories alive. Because if and when, it's almost inevitable that that object will disintegrate, it will break, something will happen to it, you'll lose it, let alone letting it go. But again, when you make that object responsible for keeping that memory alive, you just run the risk of losing all those memories because you, in some ways, have actually abdicated your responsibility for keeping it alive. So, for example, making my grandmother's poppy seed cookie recipe is a far more palpable way to keep her alive than keeping a Limoges teacup in a china cabinet.
I'm trying to get to being surrounded only by things that we adore and that I personally adore. But then I look at the second microwave in the basement and I think, well, what if the first one breaks? Maybe I should keep that second microwave. And I think that's probably not smart. What do you think?
I think that it's unlikely that you will have a microwave emergency. So if it's your second choice to begin with, it's never going to be your first choice. Nobody ever wants to be a bridesmaid. Everybody wants to be the bride. So if you're not going to use it and it isn't your first choice, you could probably let it go and know that if and when your current microwave fails, you'll probably go to a store and have it replaced if service can't come out and fix it for you.
Books. I most don't. I should say books, period. It's as if I don't need to say another word. A lot of people, especially on this show, they understand what it's like and have too many books, and
sure,
but feel so attached. And these objects, I'm not an online reader because I like the object,
sure,
and I like to see its title and that world that it represented. And so, what do you advise about books?
Well, I think, certainly, any reference book that you use regularly makes perfect sense to hold on to. I think if you are holding on to mysteries that you will never read again, I think once you know who done it, you're done with the book. You probably don't need to hold on to those. I do take full advantage of the excellent New York Public Library system in New York, and I check out books all the time from the library that I don't need to own. I do want to read, and I do, like you, like the tactile experience of holding a book in my hand, but I don't need to own the book. I try to pick and choose the books that I actually will spend enough time with that the investment of buying the book makes sense and then keeping the book. And I also will share books with friends. I don't belong to a book club, but I believe in passing things along. And if it was a great experience reading the book, I'm happy to either gift the exact book that I read to other people or buy copies of it for my friends because I want to share that experience with them.
It's the funniest thing. There are objects, like a particular book, where for me to give that book away, even though I am positive I'm not going to read that book again, is like sawing off an arm.
Mm.
You know, it is just because I think there's a book called Appetite for Life by Julia Child. It was about Julia Child's life, and it was her biographer's book, and Noel Riley Fitch, I think. And what that book represents on the shelf to me is a life well lived, just embracing the life's richness and never saying no to a good time and being busy with the best people and the best things. That's what that represents. So I'm not going to read that again, but I can't bear to think of taking it off the shelf.
And I don't think you have to. I think that the idea, again, if we're not talking about minimalism, which is a particular focus and a way that people choose to live their lives, but I'm not a minimalist. I have just enough of everything that serves me and nothing that doesn't. And so if there's room in your home for that book and that book is evocative, then that's great. If the book is crowding out something that is more meaningful to you, that's when it starts to become an issue.
Andrew, what do you say about this idea of, you know, this that spark of joy thing?
Mm-hmm.
If the item sparks joy, that's a nice phrase.
It is. I say comfort, convenience, or beauty. If the object brings you comfort, if it makes your life more convenient, if it brings beauty into your life, then by all means, figure out a way to keep it. But if it doesn't do any of those things, then I think it's pretty clear that there's something else that it is crowding out of the way, and it would be helpful for that obstacle to be removed so that you could have a direct path to joy or to happiness.
Okay, so we're talking, Andrew, you are terrific, and I think you should be back on the show, and we should do a whole hour with you. We have many more things to talk about, and these things that I'm talking with you about are about planning, having the luxury of planning,
mm-hmm,
for this kind of situation, you know, this change of some kind or transition. Next, we're going to get into what happens sometimes when you don't have the luxury of planning. All of this show today is about how to be armed with the best possible knowledge for these major transitions. I happen to be going through it right now, and so suddenly this seemed like a really good topic to me. So, Andrew, thank you so much. Your book is in print, right? Unstuff Your Life?
Oh, it is. It's on every medium. There's an audio version. There's an e-book version, and there's also a print version. So
okay, so you don't have to cart it from house to house.
No, you can listen to my mellifluous voice in your MP3 player.
Oh, you read your own book. Good for you.
I did.
You have a good voice, too. Thank you, Andrew. We'll talk to you again.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Andrew Mellon, he does a column in Real Simple magazine. Ask the Organizer, and he's smart about this. His book is called Unstuff Your Life. Next, we are going to Patty Todd of Consign and Design, which is located in Branford, Connecticut. And Patty's the one who got me thinking about all this and said, you know, this would be quite a show. And then I started going through it myself, and Patty's been a great resource. So thank you, Patty, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So you do this. This is what you do. You go to people's houses, and they either are doing some planning, they have that luxury, or it's a shock of some kind of situation, and they're thinking, what am I going to do with all this stuff, right?
So absolutely.
You hear the personal stories, you see the situation, and you agree with Andrew Mellon about getting rid of the things you know, that low-hanging fruit, just get it out of there.
Absolutely.
That's the best way. You're going to donate it. Give it to relatives and stuff. What about that idea? You know, I made a joke online about, can you be sure that your niece who loves Crate and Barrel stuff is going to like your olive green leatherette Barca lounger? This idea of imagining that your relatives are going to be clamoring for things they might not like. You must deal with this all the time.
Right. There is this idea that certain people are going to want certain things. And then when you see them fighting over the things you never even thought they would want, now you have a whole nother scenario going on. So the idea of pre-planning, talking to folks, this idea of, okay, maybe we don't want to talk about this, but let's get the family together. Let's have a potluck. Let's see who would like what, you know? And maybe we start making a list already, or maybe we start putting a little tag underneath, or, you know, maybe we just open the door on the discussion about it.
Your theory is that if you possibly can, try not to leave. You know, if you're talking to older people in this case, try not to leave these kinds of details to people after you die, just to be perfectly blunt about
Absolutely.
It, it's a gift to them to kind of get some of this stuff organized. But there are other situations where you just want to declutter. You just you say, I've got too much. And you say to yourself, I'm going to move to a new job. It could be a divorce for people. It could be absolutely anything. But the whole idea is this takes some forethought. You've got the kind of place where people can come in and buy the items. So mm-hmm. this is consignment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, when you're talking to a person about putting things in consignment,
mm-hmm.
what are the things, you're very open and honest with people, and you say, look, I'm going to talk to you about some things you don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
What? And I said to you, well, what are those things? So what's number one on that list? Is it price?
What's number one on the list generally is how much you paid for that item in 1962.
Ah, okay.
Or 1972, or in the past 10 years.
So does it ever go up in value, or does it always go down in value?
It's a resale market. And there are certain items and manufacturers whose pieces do hold value, a Hitchcock, a Stickley.
Haywood Wakefield.
Right. There are certain, and provided the condition is what it needs to be. Yeah, it's holding value. It isn't, it may, in some instances, may be more worth more than what you paid for it. But, you know, 90% of the pieces really are on a resale market. Many people overpay for furniture and accessories. And so that's the conversation to have.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't want to hear this, but you overpaid for that wing chair that you're sitting in over there.
I probably did. Although, look how it's held up for all these years.
It's beautiful.
Okay. So, Patty, stay right in your chair, right where you are. I want to know why consignment can be an advantageous move, why that's a better move than, say, online or something else. So stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation about how to get rid of stuff. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. We're talking about how to get rid of stuff, and our guest in studio is Patty Todd of Consign and Design on Route 1 in Guilford, Connecticut. I'm sorry, in Brantford, Connecticut. Anyway, it's posted at our website, The Faith Middleton Show at WNPR.org. You'll see everything about it there, questions we're going to get to during this show and some thoughts on things. Patty, we all now have so many choices in so many areas. But in this area, you can go your route, which is consignment. Mm-hmm. You can have an estate sale. You can have a tag sale in the driveway. You can list your items at various online sites that mm-hmm. everybody knows about. From your perspective, what does consignment do? What's the advantage, or when do you know when to use that?
The advantage for consignment today, in my view, from where I sit, there's two things. Buying a new piece of furniture that's quality is very hard to find, and it's very expensive. So what you're getting in consignment is solid cherry, solid mahogany, solid maple that's coming from these folks' homes who are dying and downsizing. So it's advantageous for the families who are trying to get rid of the merchandise, and it's even more advantageous for the buyer of these kinds of items. If you're looking for a mahogany drop leaf table, you know, if you're looking for a solid set of chairs or a mahogany bureau or a pine ladies dresser with a mirror, these kinds of pieces are the types of things that I will take in excellent condition that will relieve the family or the folks who are trying to downsize and now provide a fabulous piece of furniture for the new homeowner, someone who's looking to upgrade or upstyle their current living situation.
This is kind of a crazy side road to take for a second, but uh-oh. I walked into Patty's and there was a Danish modern table in there that was round, that folded up in a way that made it so small, was so unique, and became, when you unfolded, it became so huge. It was so gorgeous that I was beside myself that I had nowhere to put this table. I mean, it was absolutely spectacular.
That was a very unusual piece. That piece, along with many other pieces, came out of a home in Guilford. The woman was downsizing to New Jersey. She had bought everything in the late 60s, early 70s, rosewood teak.
How do you not keep these things?
I've learned. I'm
saying this to a declutterer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, all right. So. That's the advantage of, say, consignment. How do you know? Is there a point at which what from your perspective, what's the disadvantage of doing something online?
I think the disadvantage of doing something online is you don't know. Well, you're 100% responsible for it. And then you're getting 100% of the proceeds after all the cost of doing things online. Doing them person to person or in a local brick and mortar type of store like mine, I, as a business owner, I'm invested in selling your piece. I mean, we're both making money when that happens. I have a tremendous amount of foot traffic. I use a lot of social media. I mean, I do a lot of things to make sure that your items are selling.
What about antiques? If you're in someone's home and you have the luxury of saying, here's what I think, or no matter what the situation mm-hmm. is, and you spot an antique that probably is going to go for a reasonable amount of money, what do you do?
In that situation, and it's usually a quality type of antique, possibly a clock, and artwork falls into that category mm-hmm. as well, artwork, sculpture. I use an auctioneer, a local auctioneer, because I know that he knows that level of product a lot better than I do.
So you mean to value something and to say you should take this. So you're talking to that person, the seller, and saying, look, you've got a deal over here.
Well, or what I prefer is to coordinate, is to
On behalf of the seller, you're sending it over to auction.
Yeah, they have too many things that they have to do. My auctioneer will go right into the home, and he will value the lamp.
I see.
That it pretty much looks like Tiffany with the signature.
Ah.
Or the art.
How do you then know, when it's not something like that, and you have to go for evaluation to another person, how do you know how things should be priced? How do you find out?
Based on pieces that I have priced over the years, and I've learned pricing from an ex-business partner, I've learned pricing. And I do a lot of research online because I want to know what did this or something like this sell for in the last 2 weeks? Because what people are asking is, it's pie in the sky. What are people paying?
And these things that we all have in our lives go in and out of style. And so value goes up and down. 1 year, a certain set of china can be worth quite a bit more. And the next year, nobody seems to want it anymore.
Well, let me tell you about the china. I'm glad you brought that up. Baby boomers and their children are dying and downsizing en masse. So there's a glut of this stuff on the market, which has decreased the value even of the finest pieces, because they're everywhere. It's everywhere. Every house had it or some version of it, and it's on the internet. So now these things that may have had a much better value 10 or 12 years ago, they don't. And no one under 40 is buying any of this stuff. If they can't put it in the dishwasher, they're not buying it.
So I want to get to this idea of, and then we're going to open the phones, mm-hmm. because you might have questions whether you're thinking someday you're going to do this. As you're listening to our conversation, or you're in the midst of it right now, as I am, in terms of moving to three different locations, whatever your situation is, it might be a job change, a divorce, whatever, we'll open the phones right now, in fact, 203-776-9677, 203-776-WNPR. Trust. You mm-hmm. and I were talking before the show about how important this is when you have a business like this, and that your reputation depends on people, word of mouth with people, where mm-hmm. they say, I can. How do we recognize that how do we find someone who's either in consignment or antiques or whatever it is? What are the signs that you can trust that person? Mm-hmm. What are we looking for? How do you explain it?
It's an excellent question, and it's one of the reasons why I'm trying to position myself as a trusted resource. I don't do it all, but I'm aligning myself with people who do. And so, I mean, it's about relationship building. You know, it's about finding someone who you can look in the eye, who's going to tell you the things that you want to hear and that you don't want to hear. And who's going to explain and educate. This is the type of service that I believe has the least amount of education, and it's so important. It's critical, especially in an emergency situation.
Yeah. Tell me about what happens in an emergency situation, no matter what it is. It could be divorce or illness or death or something.
The most common emergency is a parent either has died suddenly or has fallen, gone to the rehab, can't come home, maybe has a second floor in the house. Mm-hmm. They can't come home. They're going to a rehab or some kind of facility, short or long term. And now the family's in a frenzy. Nobody lives around their family anymore. So you've got who's coming from Ohio, Michigan, New Hampshire, and they have their own lives, their own families, and all of a sudden everything is turned upside down. We have to sell the house. We have to get a lawyer. We have all these things that we have to do. We don't know even where to begin.
So do they say that to you? Because somebody has seen your sign or hears about you, and do you point them in these directions?
Well, I get a lot of calls. Mm-hmm. People, believe it or not, they still use the phone book, and that's why I still advertise in it, because they're not quite sure where to go. So they think, well, maybe we can consign some of this stuff. And it's been my experience to ask some more questions. Are you downsizing? Did someone pass away? And then the whole story spews out. Or a real estate agent will call, or a lawyer will call.
And so you're trying mm-hmm. to, if it's a person calling, a family member, mm-hmm. a relative, friend, mm-hmm. you're trying to walk them through the process. Mm-hmm. Look, you need to do the following things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do a free consultation. I'll go in and I'll talk to them and give them the different options that they have available to them with the resources aligned with those services.
Yeah, this is now that we have cell phones and can take pictures so easily. This is a whole new ball game for mm-hmm. people like you. Hang on one second. Mm-hmm. We've got a call at 203-776-WNPR. We're talking about preparing for or being shocked by getting rid of stuff. So Laura Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. Thank you. I'm calling from the East End of Long Island.
Oh, yeah.
One of your faithful listeners. I don't know how you always do it, but whether it's Dr. Ibarra or today's show, it always seems to be exactly what I'm in the middle of.
Are you moving, Laura?
Oh, well, no. I'm a classic example of, I feel like Scarlett O'Hara, as God is my witness, I will never put things in storage again. Never. If it can go in storage, you don't need it. But, excuse me, quite a few years ago, I had a large apartment in the city and, you know, was married and collected arts and antiques, and then had the opportunity to take what I thought was going to be a brief break from, got divorced, decided to take a brief break from working and travel. So I thought, well, I'll put everything in storage, some in Manhattan mini storage, some in Moishe's, Long Island City, and some out here on the East End, which, you know, is probably, you know, classic don't. And anyway, so then traveled a little bit longer, job market, particularly in investment field, which I was in. You know, we all know what happened there. So bottom line is I finally consolidated it down to, I took a bunch of stuff to auction, you know, the things that were going to, you know, whether Sotheby's or Christie's or some of the other auction houses, sold a few things to a dealer's, but I still have a lot of things in storage.
Yeah.
And so, I found myself at one point at Moishe's in sort of the fetal position crying.
I know.
Having a meltdown at Moishe's because when I looked at my all the things in storage, I didn't know where to begin, whether it was. And some of the pieces aren't, as you were talking about, you know, were valuable at one point, and that's part of my problem.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
is that, well, I know when we bought them or I bought them, whatever, I paid X. And, you know, it's hard to say, well, it's costing me more in storage now. So, you know, I might as well move into Moishe's for what I'm paying.
I know. That's so true. So, Laura, let's get to your, I think I hear what you're getting at here. When
sorry.
You're not, when you haven't got, you've gotten, the cream is off the pudding. and now you've got these sort of second tier or third tier items, and they're in storage, and you're trying to figure out what to do. So here's Patty Todd of Consigned by Design in Brantford. Patty, what do you do in a situation? How would you advise in this situation?
One of the first things that I would like you to know, Laura, is that you don't own that stuff now. It owns you.
I know.
Okay.
You're right.
And so the best thing to do is just exhale and and just be willing to let go of these things. Forget about what you paid. What you want is freedom from it. And the freedom from it is let it go. Call a consignment store locally. Call it, you know, maybe a different tier, more local auctioneer.
About a nonprofit?
That was my next, some kind of a donation. I'm not familiar with the
East End.
The East End donation centers, or are there homeless vet facilities over there? I mean, find a place where these things that you know can be useful in someone else's life can go.
Can I get to the cell phone on Laura's behalf? Because here is a situation where, Laura, you can, now that we have cell phones, you can go into that storage space and click away, take photos of things as best you can, and then call up the consignment store and say, listen, I've got photos of things, I'm going to send them to you. And then you just give me your email, and you write
exactly,
Patty.
That's exactly how the process works at my store. Get me the photos. And I can tell you what to do.
They don't even have to come to your house, in fact, or your storage area, which is also your apartment.
Right. So go to the storage area, get somebody to help me move things around, because some of these are, you know, big pieces of furniture.
Yeah.
And people, it's like you said, people really just aren't buying, whether it's china or furniture or even Stickley right now. Their things aren't selling for what they were.
Yeah.
So take photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And send it off.
And find a consignment shop in New York City or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The storage unit is actually up in the...
Okay, Laura. Good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
Where do you live on the East End?
East Hampton.
Oh, lucky. Okay, good for you.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, in a rental that's fully furnished, which makes so much sense.
And why would you need furniture? It's in storage.
Thank you, Patty. That's wonderful advice.
Okay, all right.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good luck.
Isn't it funny? 203-776-WNPR as we take this short break and then come back to Patty Todd, Consign and Design, about how to get rid of stuff. Stay with us. Faith Middleton, thank you so much to producer Jonathan McNichol for handling today's show. And it was Jonathan, in fact, who was telling me about watching David Letterman with Oprah the other night and talking about his dumpster, which is how he solved his moving problems. I feel like I'm, for instance, living in a moving truck at the moment. I noticed that there are consignment stores that will buy something outright from a seller, from an individual, and then put it in the consignment store and put whatever price on. And then there are people like you, Patty, and you don't do it that way. You do it on a percentage basis. Mm-hmm. Why do you choose that route?
Here's the thing about buying outright that I have found. And in a very small percentage of the time, I may. But here's how it works. When I buy something outright, the cash register starts ringing for me because I have to get a truck and two guys to go pick up your stuff. So now the cost of your inventory to me starts with that truck starting up.
So I see why it's expensive for you.
Yeah, and then that means I can only pay you pennies on the dollar for what you have.
I see how it affects me.
Yes, and then it gets transported to me. My contracts are only for 90 days. If it doesn't sell in 90 days, now I own it. Now what am I doing with it? Now I got to transport it again. So there's too much cost for me to do that. What I find works best in the retail scenario is we consign it. It's a 60 me, 40 you split. I hand select every piece that comes in based on what I know my customers will buy. And there's a high probability that it's going to sell in the first 45 days. So you're getting money pretty quick.
I see. So this is what you mean about educating people mm-hmm. about how this kind of thing works. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you might not at this moment be facing some kind of transition, but guaranteed, I can't imagine a life that doesn't have one in it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So Patty said, I will educate people to my best ability. So mm-hmm. thank you for the free advice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Margaret Faith Middleton with Patty Todd. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear
Welcome.
Me okay?
I can. Sure I can. To, yep.
Okay. Faith, I love your show. I've called you a couple times.
So thank you.
Kudos there.
Thank you.
Patty, this maybe won't be able to help, but I'm desperate. My husband's been trying to sell his Harley Davidson. Can you help me?
Oh, gee. Well,
now you're killing
you
me
have
over
a, do you
here.
Have a, do you have a Harley department in your
skin? I do not have a Harley department in my store, although we have been able to liquidate vehicles, boats, cars, motorcycles. I could certainly, you know, I don't know how you want me to tell people to contact me.
It's consigned.
Everything's doable.
Okay, so it's consigned by design in Guilford, Connecticut. So we'll leave that to your private private situation.
Number?
I do not, but if you go to our website, it's posted right there, and that's the Faith Middleton Show at WNPR.
Got it. And I do have to declutter. We're hoping to move in a couple years, and it's like, where do you start? It's insane.
Oh, so are you listening? Do you have a sense of where to start, Margaret?
No.
No.
But I'm a clutter freak. I unfortunately, I don't know.
Okay,
so
you heard that first wave of going through and putting stickers on things, and by these things I'm going to give away,
mm-hmm.
these things I'm going to give to nonprofits, these things I'm going to say to my relatives as they come over. Are there things here out of this group that you see yellow stickers on that you might like to have, and you're going to do this in stages. As Andrew Mellon, our previous guest, the organizing guy, and Patty have been talking about stages. And he's saying tackle the most difficult items first, or the low-hanging fruit where you go, I'm absolutely getting rid of that. And just put your stickers on those items, and there you go.
Okay.
And then that first wave goes, whether it's to a nonprofit or to your consignment store. And if you've got some fancy things, then that can go to your antiques person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yep, you're just yesing me.
These are some great tips, and I'm going to employ them. I promise.
Okay, Margaret, thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Bye bye. We're talking about getting rid of stuff on the show. So, what about factoring in? This is something I think people would forget about, and thanks to you, this was good advice. That when you're thinking about the costs of getting rid of stuff, one cost to factor in is that it's probably going to be your responsibility to some degree to bring things to these places. So you're going to have to hire truck people, or the shop hires them and you get charged.
Yes.
It might be cheaper. You have to figure out, is it cheaper for me to do it, or is it cheaper for whatever shop I'm going to do it, correct?
Right, exactly. I offer it as a courtesy. But I also have resources. I have a relationship with a rental truck dealer right around the corner from me that I will make a recommendation to. I mean, a lot of the people that are doing this are older or elderly, and they can't handle it, and they don't have a family member around. So I will coordinate any kind of pickup. And yes, there are fees around the pickups. There's fees around deliveries. There's fees around.
Yeah, because everybody's got bills to pay. I understand.
Yeah,
I understand
exactly.
How this works.
I mean, even some of the donation resources will have a small fee.
I want to talk with you next, after we take this next phone call, about the condition of an item and how important it is and how, you know, how honest everybody needs to be about that, because this is the one that can come back to bite everybody. So stay with us. Glenn, we're talking, as you know, about how to get rid of stuff. And thanks for calling 203-776-WNPR. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yes, hello, Faith.
Hi.
Hi. So my mother passed about a year ago, and she had a lot of high-end clothing, some of which I've already donated to Goodwill. I really know nothing about ladies' fashions, but I know that her lowest-end things were basically Saks Fifth Avenue, Lord & Taylor, Bloomingdale's, and then it went up from there.
Yeah.
So she's got purses, hats, all kinds of things she used to wear, and I had started donating stuff to Goodwill, and people at Goodwill were looking at me like, you don't want to bring that stuff here. You know, you need to bring it someplace else. And when I looked at consignment shops in the area, and I'm in Fairfield County, and it was a little ridiculous, you know, with the agreements and everything. And I'm fine donating this stuff and not making any money.
Okay.
Well, we're talking about nonprofit. What are you talking about? Because Goodwill is not nonprofit. They make a lot of money.
I wonder if you know about a program that comes to my mind immediately, Dress for Success, where women and men, but mostly women, are coming off of an assistance program and getting back into the workforce and want to, and then they go to job interviews, have a great appearance. And so, for instance, a family member of mine just donated some clothing for that program. But Patty, you know better than I do. What do you suggest in a situation like Glenn's?
What I would suggest with high-end ladies' clothing, if it's within the past 5 years, is to find a consignment store and bring it there, sign the contract, and let them handle it. Many of them donate at the end of the contract period, and they donate to worthy causes. If they are older pieces, more vintage, there's a couple of really fabulous vintage clothing stores around that you might want to get involved with. There are theaters all over the shoreline,
which is
a fabulous place
to
make a donation. If, you know, they know the shows that are coming. We don't. So they know the kinds of things that they're looking for.
Right. I need 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s clothing.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, Glenn. I hope we helped. Do we help to some degree?
That's it. Okay. That was very helpful. The theater idea is something I haven't even thought of. And I know people in theater that are always looking for free or cheap wardrobes for their actors.
Great, Patty. Good suggestion. Thank you so much, Glenn. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR. So quality of an item before we take another phone call. How do you fix things before you sell them? I know some people do at certain antique shops. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you personally do, but what's the average situation? How bad can the condition be in an item? And how dangerous is that if you're doing it for consignment?
Right. In my case, I do not take anything that isn't in excellent condition. If it's been repaired, I don't want it. If it has any kind of damage, I don't take it, because I'm reselling it. All my sales are final, so it's important that that broken leg that was on the chair that you had doesn't break for the next person who owns it. I don't want to take the risk of that. This is why I'm aligned with the folks that I'm aligned with for donation. Not that they're going to take the broken thing, but they're going to take the lesser quality, lesser condition item. Sometimes they do work on them, sometimes they sell them. Mm-hmm. You know, painting furniture is a huge thing right now.
Yeah.
So there is a market for the less than perfect.
Yeah, to help get somebody started.
Or to help get somebody started. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, we got a call from Edla. We're talking on the phone, as you know, Edla, about getting rid of stuff for whatever reason, whatever kind of transition you have going on in your life. Some are happy, some are sad, everything in between. Edla, how can we help you?
Just delighted that I was able to get on this call. I love listening to NPR on a daily basis.
Thank you.
Thank you for filling my life with joy based on your program and other ones that are so important. So thank
you. Well, thanks from everyone here.
Thank you. My husband and I have both retired, and we are relocating to California to be close to our families, most specifically our grandchildren, too. And we sold our big home in Wilton and now live in a small town in Shelton, Connecticut. We are selling pretty much all its contents for just because we need to. We want to haul everything back cross-country.
Yep.
And I was wondering if there was any other way to get our word out there besides your basic Craigslist, which I believe not to be of very good use to me.
Mm-hmm. Ways to get word out that you have items to sell, is that what you're saying?
Yes, consignment shops, any type of organization that if we don't sell, I would love to donate.
Oh, I see. Patty, do you have an idea on other listings for these things? You would go to your local area? Do you contact your local church, your town hall in your town to say what are the nonprofits that might be interested?
I think that's probably the best bet. Everybody has a handful of organizations that they're passionate about or have a soft spot for. So maybe a church.
Jonathan McNichol just had a great idea. The producer, he said, call your library and ask that question, your local library in Shelton. Yeah. Edla, good luck. I hope that helps.
Thank you so much.
Okay, call your library, Edla. Okay, you too.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the sweet comments.
Bye-bye.
So you can hear from the call. I mean, our lines have been jammed and the people keep piling in, and I can hear from these calls that there's every situation imaginable. You must hear everything.
Everything. I've seen and heard so many of everything. And you see the best and the worst in people and in their families.
Because sometimes these things are happening in stressful situations.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear the stress in people. I can hear it in their voices. Every single person who called in here has some tension around this topic.
Well, yeah, no matter how you're moving or why you're moving, it is, on that list that some people make up, psychologists, of stress, moving is a major thing. Mm-hmm. So you're right at the nexus of this in doing what you do. Jay, hi. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Jay.
Oh, hello. I love your show. I have to say that.
Thank you.
I have two basic questions because I know you're tough on time. And I am going to contact Patty. Two questions I have is, one, I inherited... I'm alone. I really don't have any relatives. So there's no one to leave anything to. But I inherited an estate from my aunt in Long Island, my great aunt. And I had all her stuff packed up and shipped to my house. The two questions I have, and I'm sure people probably don't want to bring this up, but at one point I said, "Gee, I can subsidize my retirement with this stuff." And I got some beautiful, very, very high-end marine stuff, gorgeous paintings. Well, what happened?
Jay,
called Christie's. Yes.
Jay, we have 60 seconds. I just don't want to cut you off.
What I'm concerned of is I don't really like someone coming to my house. I'm not sure if they're casing it to come back. I have an extensive alarm system.
Yeah.
But, when they come in here, I feel vulnerable. I mean, how much do I trust someone from Christie's or Sotheby's? I don't know.
Oh, boy. Well, I certainly would have no comment on that. But I would say the topic that you have raised is excellent. This is right. Patty's nodding her head wildly about yes. Everybody's concerned about security these days. So which gets into some of the online stuff, which is a little nerve-wracking. Now they're saying make your deals in the parking lot of the local police department.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had more time, Patty. Thank you for the nodding, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
This is Patty Todd of Consign and Design. Information at our website right now, the Faith Middleton Show at WNPR in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.